All right, I'm going to calm all conversations because we got three chapters to cover as we wrap up this book. Hello, good to see you. So we'll be starting in Judges chapter 19. Judges 19, if you want to go ahead and turn there. And the end of Judges, chapters 17 through 21, really kind of end with two stories. And they both have the same the first one begins with, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes, and this is how this sad story ends. So it's very similar. It happened before there was a king, so it certainly happened in the time period of the judges, and it really shows just how far from God the Israelites have come. And one of the things that I want to try to get across this evening is this is what happens, the story, sin, this is what happens when you do not have God in your life, when you try to do what is right in your own eyes. I thought instead of, we'll turn to Judges 19, but I wanted to read a couple of Proverbs that I think fits pretty well kind of with these last two stories of the judges. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 12 says, "There is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death." There's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. And then probably more familiar text in Proverbs chapter 3, starting in verse 5, it says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil." In this story, we have people basically coming up with their own morality system and saying, this seems right in our eyes, so let's go ahead and do that. If we choose that path, the end of that path is death. And so instead of leaning on our own understanding, let's lean upon the Lord and what he has said for us to do. A couple of times, or probably more than a couple of times in Deuteronomy, the Lord tells the people, here's are your commandments that I am laying out for you today. And these commandments are for your good. They're for your benefit if you follow these. If you don't, all these curses, right? And so we're kind of seeing that. So one of the things that we're going to see in especially this last story, which some would argue it's hard to get worse than the story that we looked at last week in chapter 17 and 18. I would say this tops the cake. I forget who I was telling. It's probably a really fitting way to end the book of Judges, where we see the Israelites becoming like the Canaanites. And I would say this story in particular, they even worse than the Canaanites. I'm just going to review the story. I assume you read it and studied beforehand. So we'll just kind of hit kind of the highlights of these stories and do some applications along the way. So looking at the very end, 21:25, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." This is a story of what happens when that's your principle, when you do what's right in your own eyes instead of looking to the Lord and abiding by his law. Last week we covered the story about a Levite that eventually headed north, right? Remember, he got hired I think it was Micah, and then the whole tribe of Dan came and said, hey, we can pay you more. And he's like, deal. So he went up and became the priest for Dan, and that didn't go very well. So this story is talking about a southbound Levite, where he starts again from Ephraim, same location. Now he's going south to Bethlehem and tries to get back home safely. That doesn't work out for him. So it started by a northbound Levite, now a southbound Levite. And again, I think Franco made this point that was really helpful to think about. If you think about a Levite, you would probably guess or hope that they would be the most, the highest morality of the group. They were the ones that were to study the law, to teach the people, this is what the law says, this is what you should want to do. And so this story involving a Levite and seeing his morality so bad, boy, if the Levite is this bad, you can kind of assume everyone else. So I kind of took Franco's comment and ran with it. I don't know what he would say all that, but anyways. Look at this story with me, and we are not given the Levite's name this time, and it really doesn't matter, right, what his name is. We can, again, learn from this story what not to do. One of the things I want to do as we go through this story, remember that phrase, everyone did what was right in his own eyes. I want to think about each individual, each character in this story, and kind of say, what was he thinking, and what would have been the right thing to do? Because everyone's doing what is right in their own eyes. So we're going to kind of look at each character and see what's going on. Okay, so verse 1 and 2, Levi had took a concubine for himself from Bethlehem in Judah, but his concubine played the harlot against him. I was wondering if, does anyone have a different version on that or a different wording instead of played the harlot?
Was unfaithful to him.
Okay, was unfaithful. There's a little bit of textual disagreement on that. And that's the other take on that. Yeah, got angry is a little bit different than being unfaithful or went into harlotry. So I don't know which one to take. There's some manuscripts that kind of read it one way and others the other. I'll let you be the decision maker on which way to go with that. It doesn't really matter. So she either gets angry or commits harlotry against her husband. And where does she go for a period of 4 months?
Home.
Back home to daddy, right? Yes, sir.
Going back to my version says played the harlot as well, but it kind of sounded like that maybe it was just she was angry with him because would her father take her in if she had acted that way?
Well, again, I think we keep going back to the point. I think that's I was going to bring that point up. What do you think about the father? And if we have it under the title of everyone did what was right in his own eyes, then it's like, well, sure, I'll take back my baby girl or whatever they called their daughters. So maybe that was not a great thing on him to say, oh, well, you're always welcome home. So we can discuss that. But it's a great point. Is he doing the right thing? And I think that's always the right question to ask as we go through this. So she's there 4 months, and the Levite says, you know what, I got to go get her back. So she goes back, or excuse me, he goes to Bethlehem to retrieve his wife slash concubine, and he is there for 3 days, and he said, okay, fourth day, we got to get back home. Let's stay till lunch. I'll feed you. Okay, well, let's stay till dinner. Okay, you know, but tomorrow we really need to leave. Okay, that's fine. The fifth day comes, and well, you know, you need breakfast. Don't go on an empty stomach. This is all in the PC version, Patrick Cawthon version. So you don't want to go off with on an empty stomach. Stay, okay, that's fine. We got to go. Oh, it's too late. So he keeps detaining him, and finally, the Levite's like, no, we have to go. So Bethlehem is, of course, pretty close to Jerusalem. And so they go north, but do they stay in Jerusalem And why not? I already answered the question for you. Why don't they want to stay in Jerusalem? Yeah, so this is kind of foreign territory, and I maybe should have said this, it's hard to kind of, where do you put these stories in the timeline of the Judges, kind of the beginning or the end? There's probably books written on that question, but this seems to be maybe later on, that's my opinion, because they did conquer Jerusalem. But then the Jebusites said, well, we'd rather have it back. Well, okay. So Jebusites are still living here. And thought, well, we don't want to stay with foreigners, so let's keep going north. And about 3 miles north of Jerusalem is a town in Benjamin called Gibeah. So they stay there. So they are in the courts of the city, and they're just kind of waiting around for someone to take them in for the night, show hospitality. And who finally shows hospitality to this Levite, his servant and concubine, and a couple of donkeys? Okay, an old man, and where is he from? Huh, that's interesting. Right? So here we have, he's going to a city in Benjamin, and who takes him in is an Ephraimite. So the father, if there is something good to say about him, he was very hospitable, and these Benjamites, not so much. So what kind of worries you already about the Benjamites, what this old man says about them? Yes, you don't want to stay here, so please come with me. In other words, it is not safe for you to be here. What does this story remind you of that happened long time ago in Genesis 19? Is that a good enough hint? Yeah, Sodom and Gomorrah, there are a lot of parallels. I wrote them down somewhere. But a lot of parallels between the Sodomites and Gomorrah to what is happening here. So you see, not only has Israel come like Canaan, they become the worst form of Canaan. What did God do to Sodom and Gomorrah? Because of their wickedness. So again, why does Judges end on this note? Well, it kind of shows just how far from God they've gotten when everyone does what's right in their own eyes. So they go to Gibeah, and the old man takes them in, and who's not happy? 22 to 26 is where I am. The Benjamites, and what are they not happy about? Kind of hard to verbally say, right? We saw this guy going into your house, and we want him. And well, what kind of worries you about the Ephraimite? Yeah, so. You just see a lot of compassion from these men, right? So they said, well, let's save him, and we'll kind of throw my daughter, who's a virgin, and his concubine, kind of throw him to the dogs. And it's, oh, we don't want that. We want him. And they're pounding on the door, again, similar to Genesis 19. I'll just read through this list real quick. If this... similarities to Lot and the Sodomites. The ones showing hospitality were not originally from there. Both the old man and Lot kept their guest from spending the night in the square. And again, all this is Genesis 19, 1 through 9. Both the old man and Lot fed their guest. Both the Benjamites and Sodomites surrounded the house where the visitors were. They both desired to have relations with the male guest. Both the old man and Lot encouraged the men not to act wickedly. Both the old man in this story and Lot offered the men virgin daughters that they could do whatever they wanted to with. and both the Benjamites and Sodomites pounded on the door. All these details, why are they there? I think it's one of the cases is it reminds you of what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah and what God wanted to do to them because they were so wicked. Not even 10 faithful men. I doubt there were anywhere close to 10 faithful people in Gibeah. So a lot of parallels there. What ends up happening is they kind of throw the concubine to them, and they mistreat her to the point where she comes back that morning to the threshold of the door. And what level of compassion do you see from the Levite the next morning? On a scale from 1 to 10, probably a 0, right? Yeah, yes, ma'am.
He was going to leave whether she was back or not.
It seems that way, yeah. Yeah, it makes you wonder. So it was kind of useless maybe at this point. And so he just said, get up. No answer. In other words, she's dead. So he takes her back home and cuts her up into 12 pieces, sending it to all the tribes, including the 2.5 tribes to the east of the Jordan. And you think about getting that mail. What in the world is going on? Get your attention. So look at kind of the lessons from the concubine. Her sin leads to disaster. Whether she was angry at her husband or was unfaithful to her husband, leaving him and going back home to daddy was not good, not what she was supposed to do. And because of that, her sin led her to being abused, which led to her death. And we're going to see in the next two chapters, this sin led to what? What did it eventually lead to? Okay, almost an entire tribe of Israel, Benjamin, gets destroyed. It led to a civil war in Israel. So sin often, always leads to destruction. And again, I'd kind of point to Proverbs 14:12. There's a way that seems right, but its way ends in death. So, lesson from the Levite. Treat others how you would want to be treated. The Levite basically throws his concubine as a piece of meat to the Benjamite men, and they act like a bunch of vicious dogs. So even though slaves are regarded as property, it still does not excuse his action. He shows zero compassion for her. How often do we put our own wants and desires over others? Always treat others in a good way, how you would want to be treated. And lesson from the Benjamites, you just see the power of sin. It did not take long at all for the Benjamites to become the Canaanites. And I would say even worse than the Canaanites. When we do what's right, according to our own eyes, according to our own wisdom, and put God's commandments aside, it never ends well. This is a sad story, but unfortunately, it gets even worse. Thoughts or comments? And I've been talking for 20 minutes and not letting you talk. So, Michael.
Seems like the big glaring difference between this story and Sodom and Gomorrah to me is that, you know, God saves Lot. He strikes the men blind. And it almost seems like the theme of this book has been, it's gotten to this point where God's like, I'm done with you. I can't handle this anymore. So there's no salvation that comes at the end for these people.
Good point. Good point. Yeah, and you see kind of near the end of this story where the people are kind of deciding on their own, this is what God wants, instead of asking God, what should we do? So again, God is not even in their picture, and God is kind of had it with these people and let it self-destruct. Yes, sir.
I think it's important that if we pick and choose, concubine or what Levi did, it's dangerous because we don't see the big picture of what has happened. Because if you go by, it talks about everybody being what is right on their own side, meaning that they eliminated God from their lives. And therefore, we're reading consequences of what happens when we eliminate God out of our life.
Yeah.
In the decisions we make, in the way we live, in everything that we do, if we eliminate God, look at how wicked we could become. And so these were the people of God. They knew. But yet, when we eliminate God out of their life, here are the consequences. And so these are just consequences, from what it seems, of eliminating God out of their life.
Great point. Yeah, the story shows the consequences of when we leave God out of our life, and don't do what He has told us to do. And again, Deuteronomy says, for our own good. It's for our benefit that we follow the Lord and follow His teaching. Well, the Levite informs Israel in chapter 20, looking at verses 1 through 7, all of Israel come to Mizpah. It says from Dan to Beersheba. So Dan, of course, would be kind of the northernmost city, Beersheba, one of the southernmost. Everywhere in between, they gather to Mizpah, and there are 400,000 Israelites who could draw the sword. And Benjamin hears Israel coming, and Israel inquires from the Levite, what happened? And I want us to look at what he says, and then we'll just kind of critique it a little bit. So read with me, starting in verse 4. This is the Levite's report to what happened. So the Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, I came with my concubine to spend the night at Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin. But the men of Gibeah rose up against me and surrounded the house at night because of me. They intended to kill me. Instead, they ravished my concubine so that she died. And I took hold of my concubine and cut her in pieces and sent her throughout the land of Israel's inheritance, for they have committed a lewd and disgraceful act in Israel. Behold, all you sons of Israel, give your advice and counsel here. If we were to critique his recount of the story, how would you critique? Would you say he did pretty good in kind of giving them all the details? He did. Very good. So, yeah, name some things he left out that would...
He's the one that pushed her out the door and gave her to them.
Yes. Convenient that he left that out. That would kind of look bad on him if he told him that little tidbit. What else? Good point. Yeah.
They did treat his concubine terribly.
Yes, he makes that assumption.
Yeah.
He jumps there and took my concubine, seemingly, I had her in safety. They took her from me and then did whatever they wanted and killed her. And so, these are just awful people. And kind of, he looks like the innocent party, right? Well, it's not really the whole truth. He failed to mention how he basically threw his concubine to them. He failed to mention his attitude towards his concubine the next morning. The Levite left all these details out, of course, putting him in a better light.
Kind of left out the old man that saved him.
Yeah, he's not involved in this story. Good point. We need to be careful to tell the entire truth. when asked about a situation, even when some of the details don't reflect great on us. Sometimes when we're the one telling the story, we tend to downgrade what we might have done wrong. So we be careful to tell the whole truth. So, call to action, right? Verse 7, the Israel's reaction to that is, boy, we are united as one man in this, and we need to get rid of the Benjamites. So one out of every 10 people was there to kind of supply the food, and the rest were ready for war. Benjamin's reaction, starting in verse 13, they're outnumbered 15-1. But the Benjamites did not want to punish members of their own tribe for their wickedness, kind of proving family is more important than doing what's right with the Lord. So they gather themselves in order to go into battle against their brothers. The tribe of Benjamin numbered 26,700 who could draw the sword, with 700 of them who were pretty good shot with a slingshot, pretty good aim, you might say. So here, this sets up this civil war. And look at verse 18. This is Israel inquiring of God, saying, "Who shall go up first for us to battle against the sons of Benjamin?" The Lord said, "Judah shall go up first." So what do you think about their question to the Lord? If we were to critique this a little bit.
First question should have been, should we go up?
Okay, exactly. Now, that's kind of what I was trying to drive at. Is they make the big assumption that this is the right thing to do. Again, they're doing what is right in their own eyes, and they're united on it. We all need to destroy Benjamin. Everyone agree? Agreed. Okay, so God, which one are you going to send first? And he says, Judah. What does God leave out? Exactly. Yeah, a little detail. If you're going to win or not, Judah, you go up first. Remember, Judah wasn't so great in the last story and kind of involved with this. So again, you maybe see the God using the Benjamites to punish Judah. Perhaps that's what you're seeing here. Michael, did you have a comment?
It does harken back to chapter 1. You know,
yes.
In the very first verse, who shall go up first for us against the Canaanites to fight against them?
Yes.
Who shall go up?
Yes. So what would be the difference between chapter 1 and then here in chapter 20? What would you say is the main difference? Okay.
In chapter 20, we don't for sure know.
Exactly. Yeah, great, great observation. So God told him, I want you to go up, conquer the land. So, okay, with that, who do you want to go first? Here, we're already making the assumption, this is what we need to do. The Benjamites, we need to get rid of. So God, which one of us you want to punish first? Maybe is the maybe correct question they asked. Just a lesson here. We need to seek God's will before asking his blessing. Sometimes we make assumptions. This is what God wants. This is certainly what he desires. And I'm asking his blessing. And well, instead, let's make sure we have his approval. So the first outcome of this civil war, first, the Benjamites win, right? And second time, what happens? Same thing. So I see, and you can judge for yourself, I see a little bit of a different attitude starting in verse 23. Now the sons of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until evening and inquired of the Lord, saying, shall we again draw near for battle against the sons of my brother Benjamin? Ah, finally, they're asking the right question. Shall we even go up? Ah, good. Now that you've learned that, yes, you can go up. And so they did, and Benjamin falls. And it's a massive, kind of overwhelming victory. I skipped ahead, didn't I? I didn't do that correct. Look at verse 27. The sons of Israel inquired of the Lord. That's right. Did I have it right all along? I did. And then the third day, they have a change of attitude. That's why y'all are here, to make sure I'm on the right page. So appreciate that. Just a great lesson for us to rely upon the Lord. make sure we have his approval. The third battle, of course, goes against Benjamin, and they kind of see, this is kind of, first it looked like the first two battles where we were able to kind of drive them out, and then kind of another army comes in and kind of burns the city, and that was kind of the sign. Now they're attacked on both ends, and Benjamin is pretty much destroyed, killing 25,100 Benjamites. So that's kind of a summary of what happened through verse 35. Kind of the latter part of verse 36 through 48 give us a little bit more details about exactly what happened, which I kind of did that. So I'm going to kind of move on into chapter 21, if that's allowable. Yes, sir.
Verse 31, I think, is kind of interesting, because it says, you know, when they're first kind of taking them out, about 30 men of Israel died still.
Right.
You think back in, like, Joshua, they were terrified when 30 men of Israel died at Ai.
Right.
And now it's like, just a little minor number, 30 men died, and then the tables turn, whereas now thousands and thousands are dying.
Yeah.
It's just a total course reversal of what it used to be.
Great point. I'll mention this, and I may mention it later on. What do you think of the Israelites' reaction to Benjamin? Kind of, again, kind of under the umbrella, everyone's doing what is right in their own eyes. What do you see from the Israelites against Benjamin here? Yeah, you see, I see a lot of zeal. And man, we must punish them. We have to get rid of them. It seems to me that they are showing more zeal to destroy some of their own people than they showed in getting rid of the Canaanites. I would argue, and I could be wrong, it's my opinion, I would argue if they showed this much zeal in getting rid of the Canaanites in the beginning, they probably wouldn't be having these problems. But they just kind of fell right into the influence of the Canaanites. But again and again, you see this, we saw this earlier, right? Especially with, was it Jephthah? Where he's fine about destroying his own people. So you see a lot of intensity, again, with God's people kind of fighting each other, where you don't see necessarily, I don't see that same intensity and zeal to get rid of the Canaanites. So just kind of a sad commentary on God's people here. Anything else before we look at this final chapter, 21? Any other comments? All right, so looking at chapter 21, we kind of see the end of this awful story. And verses 1 through 4, we encounter kind of a problem here. And it's a problem specifically, I guess, for Benjamin. As they had sworn at Mizpah not to allow their daughters to marry the sons of Benjamin. There's not many men left of Benjamin, and they destroyed the women and children. So what's going to happen to Benjamin is kind of what they're worried about, right? We did make this promise that we can't give our daughters to them. So what are they essentially doing with that oath or with that promise? Kind of leaving Benjamin to just not exist anymore. So not leaving them anyone to marry. Who does this remind you of, given a really bad promise to the Lord? Anyone else?
Jephthah.
Yeah, it's whatever comes out of my house first, I'll sacrifice. That's probably not a good idea. Again, we kind of see that problem arise again. Israel in verses 2 and 3 weeps for Benjamin, and the next day Israel builds an altar, makes sacrifices to God. There is no one for the Benjamites to marry. So they were sorry for Benjamin, concluding one tribe was lost that day. So verse 7, they are trying to figure out, well, what shall we do? And pay attention to the wording in verse 7 there of chapter 21. What shall we do for wives for those who are left, since we have sworn by the Lord not to give them any of our daughters in marriage? So what shall we do? Whose understanding and wisdom are they leaning upon? And that's kind of what I was trying to get at the beginning. Yes, ma'am.
They're off on the wrong track, though, because they start out when they're weeping and hollering about this because they're so upset because they don't have these wives. And what are they going to do at the beginning of the chapter? They're not admitting that they're the cause of it. It's like,
correct.
Why, Lord God of Israel, has it occurred that one tribe is missing in Israel today?
Yes.
Well, duh, it was you.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you to do that. You never asked him to do that.
Right.
You just took off and did it. So they're not even accepting responsibility.
Great point.
For what they've done.
Good point. Yeah, that is exactly right. They're the reason for the problem that they currently have. So they're confiding, they're counseling with each other. Probably a good idea to ask God. Would have been a good idea to ask him at the very beginning what to do. They didn't do that. They're not asking God now. So they're confiding in each other. Well, what do we do? So part one of the solution, and then we'll have a part two. Verses 8 through 14, what question do they ask? What are they coming up with together about this problem?
Who's not here?
Okay, yeah. Who among us is not here that they didn't take that oath, and therefore their daughters are available? So who's not here that we can help the Benjamites repopulate? Yeah, exactly. They should have been here, but it kind of works out that they weren't. And who are the lucky people? What town? Jabesh-Gilead. Do you understand the Jabesh-Gilead, kind of the hyphenation? It would be, I think, Jerry, is there a Nashville, Arkansas? I think so.
Yes.
Okay. So it's kind of like that. Nashville, Arkansas, Nashville, Tennessee, Jabesh, Canaan, Jabesh, Gilead. Did that make sense? This is the Jabesh located in Gilead. That's probably more than you wanted to know. So Jabesh, Gilead. Now there's no one there that came. So what did they do? Okay. And who lives in Jabesh, Gilead? I think this is important. Obvious. Is that a good question? Is fellow Israelites? So they are attacking their own people again. This is not there's some Canaanites living. We need to get the more territory. No, this is they're killing their own people, so they can help Benjamin.
Repopulate Benjamin.
Yeah. Exactly. So this is our solution to the problem. Again, I mean, you just kind of read that last verse again and again. Everyone that is doing right in their own eyes. They're not consulting the Lord what they should be doing. So everything's good, right? What problem do we have at the kind of end of verse 15 there? Man, we're still missing some girls for these Benjamites. So their solution?
Best idea they ever had in the whole book.
There's a big dance, right? and it's at Shiloh, and it happens every year. Man, this is gonna, you can just kind of pick out your own dancer, if you will. For all you musical people, it always reminds me of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. So they stole it, right? I mean, it's a biblical musical, right? I won't go that far. So here we go. So they just kind of take the women for themselves. And, well, now it's going through my head, the Sabine women. Jerry gets it. What's kind of a problem with this plan that's going to come up? Who's not going to be happy? So the fathers and even, you know, some of those brothers are going to make sure that you can't just take my sister like that. What is the Israelites' reasoning there in verse 22? This is what they're going to say. Give them to us voluntarily because we did not take for each man of Benjamin a wife in battle, nor did you give them to them, else you would now be guilty. Did you kind of reason with that? What's their reasoning? Okay, we had an oath, and you didn't take the oath, and we need to repopulate Benjamin, so we can't give our daughters, so it was really upon you, and so we're guiltless. And isn't it amazing how our own reasoning, and this is sin written all over it, right? How our own reasoning, we can just kind of say, we're innocent. It's kind of amazing how that can happen.
I like how they use the word caught. You're going to catch them.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just going to go up and grab
them. Yes. And again, I'd refer you to Seven Brides for Seven Brothers for a good picture of that. It's just a sad story. And what's the concluding verse is, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. These last five chapters should emphasize to us how things will turn out when we do what is right in our own eyes. If we primarily go upon our own wisdom instead of looking to the Lord, looking to his people for guidance, this is where sin goes. It gets from bad to worse to even worse. And isn't it kind of fitting? It shows just how bad things are in this time period of the judges. And again, I would say I don't know when this story happened, but I would just guess, this is again my opinion, that this would happen near the end of the time of the judges.
If we don't follow the standard that God has given us, we make decisions based on the same way they did. It says, you know, whatever seemed right to them, but basically whatever seemed right to them is what their emotions drove.
Correct.
This was from day one, this was the emotion shouting about. There was no reasoning thought through here. There was not, even devoid of God, there was no reasoning.
Yes.
But then you put in the spiritual piece, because they're God's people, that's the first place they should have gone. But without it, it's all emotion-driven. And that's the opposite of that is not, or the opposite of that is not having emotions. It's making our emotions align with God's word.
Yes. Make sure. Yes. Make sure that we are doing what God has said, not we're doing something based on how we feel or what we think is right. Boy, that leads down a path to where you see. Great comment. Good thought. Okay, well, we finished Judges, but we're not finished yet. We're going to look at one more story that happened in the time of the judges that's a whole lot better than these two debacles that we looked at. So Lord willing, we'll look at the book of Ruth. And kind of for a positive example, we've learned what not to do again and again. Maybe we can learn kind of a good thing and how we should act. And isn't it interesting? Ruth is from where? Moab. What's the good example in the time of Judges? A Moabite. So we'll look at that, Lord willing, next week. So I encourage you to read through that book. And in preparation, we'll look at that, study that together next week.